In today's show, we're going to talk about empathy. It's the leader's, well, it's leadership's top ingredient. We're also going to talk about the words that leaders use, the terms that kind of define our leadership. And we're going to do it in episode 277 of Higher Human Performance, the podcast. Welcome. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance. You can find the blog post for today's show, episode 277, at the website higherhumanperformance.com. Simply plug in the number 277 in the search box over at the website. It will take you right there. Very cute photograph of a couple of kids embracing. Courtesy of Flickr user G-A-G-I-L-A-S. Have no idea how he pronounces it, but it's a really good photograph. So courtesy of Flickr and a Flickr user. Again, I was a young leader when it first happened. An employee was going through a really difficult time. He was going through a divorce, and it wasn't just like any divorce. Well, is there anything like just any divorce? This one was an especially hurtful one because he was very in love with his wife, which, well, okay, that helps. But his wife had been having an affair. Turns out she'd been having an affair for a significant period of time. And, when he found out, well, basically she told him, she didn't want him anymore. And he was crushed. His world came to a screeching halt. And everybody in the organization felt awful for this fellow. Nobody really knew what to say. I was watching this from a distance that is required of leadership. I did express my sympathies, but really not much else, at least at first. He moved out of the house, got an apartment close to work. He and his wife, they put the house up for sale, and he wrestled with all of those details that would be required if you're going to start your life over, at least this part of your life. And as the weeks rolled by, his performance, which had always been very high, he had been in the upper tier of performers, it was just continuing to slip. Okay, understandable. And for weeks I let it go because I knew that he was struggling to get back on his feet emotionally. And he had the move and all the legal details of the divorce. My gut just told me, my instincts told me he needs a little bit of time. And I was perfectly willing to give him a little bit of time. But I was watching, and I was watching very closely. It was years ago when this happened, and I can't be sure how long I sat on the sidelines kind of watching his performance, but it may not have been soon enough. May have been too soon. I mean, how do you know these things? I had never dealt with anything like this before. I was in my 20s, and I had no clue what divorce felt like or what my leadership support should look like under these circumstances. I mean, I was figuring it out in real time, just like he was. Two men in uncharted water. Me, determined to serve him as best I could, but struggling how. Him, determined to hang on, survive, and try somehow to get past this pain, but struggling how. At some point after reviewing his performance slide, I made up my mind that I'm just going to have to sit down and have a conversation with him, a difficult but necessary conversation. The truth of the situation dawned on me at some point while I was observing his pain and his performance. My role, I felt, was to serve him, namely to help him and to help all the employees perform and achieve as much as they could. And I had always viewed my role as a leader, and I still do, to knock down the roadblocks, to knock down the roadblocks or the speed bumps that might prevent employees from doing their best work. Regularly, I had told employees that if it weren't for that work, I wouldn't have any work. I mean, there wouldn't be any need for me to be there. And that wasn't just idealism on my part. It was, and it still is, reality. Empathy is easy, or it's not. For me, empathy was always easy. I never remember a time when it was difficult, even as a little kid. And life has not hardened me in that regard. If anything, it has made me more sensitive, because now I know the hardships that life can dole out. That's what maturity and experience does for you. But I remember, even as an elementary school kid on the playground, I was the peacemaker. In the neighborhood, I was the peacemaker. I didn't want kids to get in trouble, and I sure didn't want somebody to get hurt. And I didn't insert myself with kids that I didn't know unless we were all playing together and then some argument broke out. You know, occasionally you get out on the playground and a game of football or whatever breaks out. Well, you don't know everybody. You may know of them, but you don't know them well. And if an argument broke out in that context and I didn't know them well, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. I was still going to interject myself and try to calm things down. But I didn't just go up to two complete kids who were getting into it. And I mean, I wouldn't inject myself like that. I was a peacemaker. I wasn't crazy. I was a communicator. And so I was very quick to negotiate a solution in hopes that we could avoid the strife and mainly get on back about the business of playing. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes kids were just bent on fighting and there wasn't anything I could do or say. Meanwhile, my empathy, it grew with my height, my weight, and my maturity. Let's not focus on that middle one so much. I'm confident that my empathy today is higher than it has ever been, and I suspect that it's even going to be higher in the future until I just completely lose my mind. The day arrived, the fateful day arrived, that I was intent on having this tough conversation with my divorcing employee. And so I called him in my office, and yes, I was nervous. But I thought this thing through. I had thought it through, and I'd been looking at this, and this had been weighing on my mind long enough. And I knew that once I got him in front of me, the words would come easily to me because, well, they do. As with most things, I was going to speak from my heart. When you speak from your heart, it's just easier, at least for me. I cared about him. I cared about his performance. I wasn't his buddy. I wasn't his personal friend. I was his boss. And my actions resulted that day from my obligation to serve him. Well, as we sat together, I told him I was sorry that he was enduring these tough times. And I told him, I can't relate. I can't tell you I understand because I don't. I've never endured what you're going through. And mainly I told him that I owed him better, and I apologized for taking so long to talk to him. But I did tell him I wanted to give you some time and some space, but I'm worried about you and I'm worried about your professional performance. And it's always been very high. And understandably, it has slipped in recent weeks and months, but it's continuing to erode, and it's time for me to have this difficult conversation with you. I can't do much to help you away from here, away from work, but I'm devoted to help you excel here and get back your typical high performance. Because even if things are going south in other areas of your life, I just can't get away from the nagging truth that if they go south here, if your career goes south, how does that help anything? And so I told him that I was devoted. I was devoted to help him perform well. I was devoted to make sure that my expectation for him to be the excellent player that he had been before, that he gets back to that. And within less than 10 minutes, I would say, I was done. It was over. And the relief on his face and the relief in his physical presence, it was visible. I stood up. He stood up. I told him how confident I was that he could reclaim his prior position of being an excellent performer. I extended my hand to shake his, and he looked at me and he seemed only able to say, "Thank you." I gave him a brief hug and told him that he'd get through this and that I was determined to help him succeed here. I'm determined to help you be everything that you were and that you can be here at work. Well, his performance, it started to slowly accelerate. It wasn't some proverbial switch flip. Now, coworkers seem to notice a change right away for the better. Attitude, demeanor, less lethargic. And that was a good thing. Confidence began to come back sooner than later. But it was a couple of weeks. It was a couple of weeks or more before his actual performance started going up. And to his credit, he kept it going up and he got it back on track. And I tell that story because empathy is what drove me to do it. Empathy drives every good leader to properly serve the people of the organization. Confronting somebody's poor performance, that may seem an odd way of showing empathy, but I think it's the best way if you're going to be an effective leader. Let me talk to you about the words that leaders use, because leaders, I've talked in the past, and even just the last episode, about the stories that leaders tell and how we can learn some things. And it's not just stories. It's just words sometimes. I've known leaders who have used pronouns, and the pronouns that they have really focused on are, you know, my people, my trucks, my inventory, my stores, my whatever, as opposed to our. That tells you something about the leader. I know other leaders who talk about control, really focused on control, as opposed to others that are more focused on freedom, flexibility, creativity. So the words that we use as leaders tend to convey our philosophy and our approach, our leadership approach. I've said many times, and it bears repeating again for the umpteenth time, there is no one size fits all. I know some autocratic tyrants who are operating extraordinarily profitable enterprises. Now, it could be argued that to operate a profitable, even a highly profitable enterprise is very different than building or maintaining high performance in an organization. I think there is. But there are so many factors here to throw into the mix. You can't paint with a really broad brush in every area. I know some people who are autocratic tyrants who happen to be in highly profitable businesses. That is, the profit margins that they are able to sustain in their industry are so extraordinarily high. Quite honestly, it can make up for a lack of leadership. It can make up for a lack of management. It can make up for a lot of lack. I know other people who are in industries where the margins are razor thin. And as a result of those razor thin margins, the margin for error is also razor thin. And so a leader's style, a leader's substance, a lot less forgiving when you don't have the profits to back you up. So a lot of it depends on the space that you're in, the profitability. If you're in a for-profit enterprise, if you are in a nonprofit, it may depend on the political climate. It may depend on various and sundry people, some who may be elected, others who may be appointed. There may be things well beyond your control. My approach to leadership is pretty simple, actually, because I'm basically a pretty simple person. And that is, just what can we do to elevate the performance of these people? What can we do as a leader? Because basically what the leader has is, the leader has got what some would call the power of the pen. The leader has got the ability to knock down those roadblocks, the ability to get some things done, the ability to say yes, the ability to say no, the ability to just get rid of whatever the constraint might be that's in the way of the people. Now, some constraints are just there, and you just got to deal with them. You may have to deal with the fact that you are in a space where the profit margins, they are what they are. And yes, you can do some things to inch them up, but you can look at any industry, and industries tend to have profit margins that are what they are. Now, what many people can do in the cutthroat world of airlines, for instance, here in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, we've got two of them. We've got American and we've got Southwest. Southwest has typically been crazier, more profitable, because they have been able to hedge their bets in fuel cost. It's one big, big thing that they have done. Well, the margins are what they are, but one way to impact those margins is to control cost. And so they can do that. Now, we can look at Southwest and we can look at their leadership style and we can look at the way that they operate, and we see an airline they're just very different, though. They're very different. They certainly do not seem, and by all accounts, they are not these autocratic, outrageous tyrants, you know, cracking a whip and hollering mush, but they're on their business, and they are focused not only on cost, but they're also focused on customer experiences. And so there's a lot that goes into this, but let's get back to it. Let's get back to the words that leaders use. And these words like control, or these words like the pronouns that we use, my, or our, or we, or them. These words are important, and I think they speak to whether we have some degree of empathy, whether we view people quite like we ought to view them as people. And I think some leaders may get too consumed about business being business. And we want to make this real clear delineation that, you know, this is business. This is strictly business. Is it? I mean, can leadership really be strictly business? I don't think so, because we spend an awful lot of time together. We spend an awful lot of time in our organizations. We have relationships and we have friendships. Some may extend outside of work. But if you look at a typical 40, 45-hour work week, that's a lot of hours that we spend around people, or influenced, persuaded by people, and influencing and persuading other people in a work environment. For us to just say, well, it's strictly business. Usually you hear that when somebody's having a difficult conversation. Now, this is strictly business. Well, it can be strictly business, but still have the human component to it. And there's no getting around the human component when we start talking about empathy, because that's what empathy is. Empathy is our ability to look in someone else and kind of see a reflection of ourself. And as much as I looked at this young man a long, long time ago who was going through a bitter divorce, I couldn't see myself in his shoes, but through my imagination, I could. Through my imagination, I could imagine how horrible this must be. I mean, this must suck so bad. Man, what do you do? But I just had to make the conclusion, I can't let his career go down the tubes. I'm not anybody to him away from here. And so in that regard, this is strictly business. But it's not just business. My relationship was business focused, but my empathy extended beyond the walls of the workplace. Even though I didn't inject myself into his personal life, which would have been completely inappropriate. But it was empathy that drove me to do it. What are the words that you're using? When you look at situations like that, let's say that you have an employee. Let's say that that's happening to you, the scenario I just described. And I've had many others, and some that have been far worse than that, by the way. What words come to your mind? Accountability. Do you just have a real tough outer shell, and you just, hey, that's just how it is. You know, they just need to build a bridge and get over it. How do you approach such things? I think it matters. It matters our worldview, and it matters how we see our role as leaders. And that really is the focus of today's show. Our role as leaders, our responsibility to our people. You're a leader because you're getting work done through others. You're a leader because your work product, it's kind of tough. It's kind of tough to look at. It's kind of tough to get your hands on sometimes because mostly your work is done on the backs of other people. You are either helping or you are hindering other people in doing their work. And if you're a good leader, if you're an effective leader, you're helping. If you're a poor leader, the organization's just made worse because you're there. The organization would be better if you weren't. I've long kind of jokingly told people, I don't know, this came to me in a conversation years and years and years ago, and someone was lamenting whether or not to get rid of an employee that was not doing a very good job. And they had gone through rounds and rounds and rounds of quote unquote disciplinary tactics to try to get this person to turn themselves around. Well, it wasn't happening. And they were struggling with this decision. And I remember telling them, I said, you know, for me, I'm just not that complicated a guy. For me, it's pretty simple. Once you've gone through what y'all have gone through, now it boils down to when he's gone, are they going to hold a funeral? Is there going to be a wake? Or are we going to have a weenie roast? And almost, there were two people in the room. And both of them, almost without hesitation, said, oh, weenie roast. I mean, it's going to be a party. Well, then I don't get it. Then I don't understand the hesitation here. Now, again, let's put some context on this. We're not talking about somebody that they were going to go blindside. We're talking about somebody that had a history of some performance issues. They had a history of they have gone to this person. They've said, listen, this is what's going on. You can't keep doing this. Here's what you need to do to improve. And they had done that a handful of times. In fact, they'd done it way more than they should have. And so I think that's part of it as well. We're dealing with humans. We're dealing with people. And we're getting work done through people. And as a leader, I would ask that same question about you. If you're gone, if tomorrow news hits, he's not here anymore. Is it a hip hip hooray? Is it a ticker tape parade? Is it a weenie roast? Or are people going to be very, very nervous? Are people going to be very sad, sorrowful? Now, that may not be a complete 100% accurate barometer of your leadership effectiveness, yeah, but it's got some bearing. It's got some bearing in how you are viewed. And the reason that that is important is because, again, the subject is empathy. I know a lot of leaders who have a reputation to be one thing, and once I have gotten to know them, I have come to understand that the reputation that they have might be, for instance, that they just lack empathy. And yet I've not found that to be the case. I've hung around leaders and I've watched them in their natural habitat, which is how I roll, and found that, you know, man, I didn't have them pegged right at all. And I had them pegged based on intel that I got from other people, people who weren't in their team. And I'm thinking, it's interesting. It's interesting why they have this reputation as not having empathy, not being compassionate, when I look and I see that they do. And then I realize, I go back to these words that leaders use, and you realize that what some people deem empathy, it ain't necessarily what I deem empathy. I just gave you a story that illustrates my empathy. But I have sat in front of other leaders who have expressed that for them, empathy is, and they don't use this phrase, but this is what they mean, it's cutting people some slack. Cutting people some slack. You know, it's being compassionate and letting people off the hook for some period of time. That's just not my worldview. I think that is idiocy, and I think it's an insane way to serve people, because it doesn't do anybody any good. if a leader is going to exist in an organization, the only reason they exist is for the benefit of the people. And if there is no benefit to the people, then why are they there? Get somebody else. Or try some of these newfangled business models and organizational models. Do away with leaders altogether. Now, I'm not a big fan of that, but that's a topic for another day. Empathy. What is it? How do you display it? What do you think it is? Is it extending courtesy? And would it be realizing that this man is going through a really difficult divorce and I'm just going to let it slide. He'll come out of it. What if he doesn't? What if you're sitting in front of him having to give him his walking papers? Now, how do you feel? See, I just couldn't put myself in that position. I just absolutely positively couldn't put myself in that position. And better yet, I couldn't put him in that position. I just couldn't. I've been asked for a long, long time, and many, 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 many people have asked me this, especially when they have observed that there's somebody on their team that they don't think has a significant enough degree of empathy. Can you teach it? And my patented response is, I can't. Maybe somebody can, but I certainly don't profess to be bright enough to teach it. I think you should hire it. I think some of the things that you should hire, I think you should hire empathy. I think you should hire likability. And I think you should hire someone who is congruent with the way you lead. Yeah, that's what I think. Those are the three things that I look for. And I know it's not an episode about hiring, but I'll throw that in as bonus content that you paid nothing for. That's how we roll around here. High value for higher human performance. Higher empathy, higher likability, and hire someone who is congruent with the way that you need to lead. Well, for instance, I know people and man, they are great. They're wonderful. As long as somebody's kicking their butt up over their head all the time. I know other people that cannot positively, absolutely cannot perform if anybody's looking over their shoulder. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't need accountability, but they just don't do well on a stage with a spotlight on them and the boss peering over their shoulder, metaphorically or literally. They just don't. Now, I know other people who do. If you are the boss, if you're the leader who does like to go peer over people's shoulder, then you don't need to hire someone who can't work under those conditions. I mean, you're just doing yourself and them a disservice. So when I say someone that is congruent with the way that you want to lead and the way you need to lead, that's what I mean. Empathy, likability, and someone that is congruent with the way that you roll, because that's what you need. That's what you need. Empathy is, in my opinion, the leadership's top ingredient. It's not the only ingredient. I say it's the top ingredient because, like any recipe, generally that first item, that's the big one. You know, that's the big one. And without that one, the recipe's not going to work. If you as a leader do not have empathy, a significant degree enough of empathy, To me, it doesn't matter what else you got. If you don't have that, you got nothing. You're not going to make the cake that you want to make or the pie that you want to make or anything else. It's just not going to work out. Because by its very definition, leadership is impacting others. It's helping. It's serving others. And if you can't get your head wrapped around that, and if your worldview is significantly different, so that you think you are the leader, they are all here to serve me, yeah, you're missing the boat. You're missing the boat. I was having a conversation just about 3 weeks ago, and we were talking about some subordinates who were kind of having some difficulty with authority. Not just specific authority, just kind of any authority. They just, you know, and some people are wired that way. Some people are just kind of contrarians, and there were a couple of these lower level managers who were just kind of, that's how they roll. They just, They weren't snarky. They weren't sarcastic. They weren't disrespectful, but you could just tell it just kind of irked them to be told anything. And it didn't matter who it was. Boss, somebody from another division, didn't matter. And in our discussion about that was the discussion of this topic of leaders and empathy and leaders feeling like, hey, serve me, kiss my ring, bow down to me, as opposed to the leader feeling like, I'm here to serve you guys. And my comment was with regard to these people that had not yet learned to serve their leader and to, in every way, shape, and form, display the proper presence in front of authority. How are you helping them? How is this benefiting their career? These happen to be some younger people. And my argument was, let's just think 5-10 years down the road. How's this going to work out well for these people? Now, their work product was perfectly fine, if not good. But they needed some tweaks in how they worked with others, especially how they managed up the chain. My belief and my contention was, with their direct bosses, you owe them, you need to be empathetic, and you need to teach them, you need to instruct them, and you need to hold them accountable. They need to learn this. They need to learn to manage up. Not because you want to wear being the boss on your sleeve, not because you have this opinion that everybody should serve me and kiss my ring, because I don't believe that. And they didn't either. But you need to do it because that's what best serves them. That's what best helps them. And if they don't learn it, where do you think they're going to end up? Well, they said, well, one of the guys, first thing he says, no, well, nobody's going to put up with it. You know, I mean, we put up with it, but nobody else would put up with it. I said, well, then how are you helping them? You're not helping them. You need to help them to not be a person who has to be put up with. They need to be a person that's bringing high value, and they're able to not only just manage among their peers and to manage down the ladder, but they can manage up the ladder. That's empathy. And that's why I say it's leadership's top ingredient, because it drives everything. And it drives everything because once you can put things in the context of serving other people and helping them be the very best they can be, even if that means that they need to do a better job of saluting you, the boss, because you need a salute? No. But they need to learn to do it because that helps them. Well, that changes everything. Should. I think it does. And that's 277. Hey, a lot more could be said. This is one of my favorite topics. Empathy is one of those things that, I don't know. I'm fascinated when I see people that just, you can tell, they just don't have it. And for years and years, I've been fascinated. Why? You know, why is it some people are just so wired? I've just come to say, it is what it is. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. I just know if I'm hiring what I'm looking for, and I know that I'm off the charts in empathy. I'm off the charts in being intuitive. You know, I mean, there are just some things that you're just better off having the self-realization that you are what you are. But I do think as organizations, I do think that we need to look for the qualities that we want. And when you're trying to develop leaders, especially leaders, but I think in any area, I'm looking for people who have empathy. And people that don't have empathy, the reason that I just think it's crucial. I think it's crucial for delivery of a good customer experience. It's good for working with others. It's good for managing up. And because I'm so off the charts, I have a hard time with somebody who doesn't have it. So there is that. Likeability. Well, that's the whole other thing. We've got to be likable in the workplace. And then, of course, that third one that I said is congruent, just congruent with the way that you roll. Lots of ingredients to leadership. And again, it's not one size fits all. We are going for the optimum. Are you going to hit the optimum every day? You're not. I'm not either. There are days that you're going to misbehave. There are days that you're going to say the thing that you shouldn't say. There are days that you're going to make a bad decision. I think what empathy does, though, is when empathy is the engine behind it all, empathy is the thing that has afforded me the opportunity to stand in front of a group of people when I have completely botched it and owned it and stood up in front of them and said, I owe everybody here an apology because I completely vexed your work last week. I made a decision. I thought it was a good decision. Turns out it wasn't. And I apologize. That's empathy. Because I can't imagine being in their shoes and working so hard only to have a guy who's got the power of the pen who just completely wrecked our progress here. And the last thing I would want is a guy that's so arrogant or a woman so arrogant that they couldn't own that, couldn't live up to it. We're all people, and we're people serving people. We have different roles, that's for sure. And leadership's role is a significant role. Don't diminish it. My name is Randy Cantrell. The city of origin is Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. HireHumanPerformance.com is the website. The podcast is brought to you by Bula Network, LLC. Bula is B-U-L-A, a Fiji term. You can read all about it. Go to the website, HireHumanPerformance.com. Click on that About page, and it'll tell you all that you need to know. I appreciate you listening. It's been episode 277. Subscribe to the podcast, won't you? All kinds of ways you can do that. There are links directly to iTunes or Stitcher, even Android, over at the website. Again, it's HireHumanPerformance.com. I'm coming to you from it's from my workspace where the walls are painted yellow. So I have nicknamed the space the Yellow Studio. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio.